WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program for a Wednesday. Winter is back here in the Butler area, and really for the first time since, we had some chilly weather back before Christmas, but not a whole lot of snow this year after the big one before Thanksgiving that brought down all the power lines. And our temperatures have been rather moderate up until today. And the wind is blowing. We got a little bit of light lake effect snow. Winter time. Well, it's headed toward the middle of January. I've been looking forward to this program for quite a while because I found out that Butler native Kristen Hibbs is back to visit with family for a while. And she's graciously decided to step in and chat with us for a while here today. Kristen is now living and working in England, in London. Kristen, it is delightful to see you again.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's really nice to be back.
And I know you're just back, like a couple of days ago, so...
Yeah, just got in on Monday.
Yeah. Jet lag over with yet, or are you
We're getting there. I wake up really early, so there's quite a lot of quiet time in the morning for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have been traveling a great deal in your capacity as head of design for the Science Museum. And we want to talk about that today because you've been all over the world, haven't you?
It's been exceptional, yes. I used to complain that when I switched jobs and started working at the Science Museum that all of my travel stopped. And this year, I think, it's been remarkable. A little bit out of hand, almost. But uh-huh. Yeah, I've seen sort of all corners of the world this year and places that I'd never been to before, which was really exciting.
Well, we want to talk about that, but there will be some listeners. Other folks will know you and your family. By the way, family's here with us in the studio today. They get you home for a couple of weeks. They probably don't want to let you out of their sight,
just,
you know?
They just follow me around, yes.
Well, rightly so. but anyway, there will be people who don't know you. And they're saying, "What? This is a Butler native. She now lives and works in England." Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes, I live in London. It's an interesting set of steps that got me there, but I've been there for, I guess it's going to be 14 years in August now.
Quite a while.
Which is, yeah, that's a good amount of time.
You went to Butler High School, right?
Yes, I did. Graduated in 97.
And then you studied architecture.
Yes, I studied at the University of Cincinnati, which I suppose I ended up there. I mean, they had a great program, and a part of their of the course was that you had to do internships as a part of the education and the degree, and they offered opportunities for doing those internships abroad.
And you said yes.
In my mind, I was like, that's where I need to go, yes. And in particular, Germany, because that's where I sort of got my start with traveling, was through a German exchange program that mm-hmm. I had done when I was in high school.
And you found out you liked it, and when the opportunity arose to work permanently in Europe, you said, yeah.
I did, yes. Mm-hmm. I said yes to pretty much every opportunity that came around. And if you ask my parents, anytime I started a phone call in the evening with, I've got this really amazing opportunity. They sort of knew that there was going to be trouble and at least an airplane flight away for the opportunity. But
well, with air travel, it's not so bad. I mean, coming from London here to Pennsylvania, it takes a little longer than it does going the other way because you're battling the winds the whole way. But it's still, what, 6-7 hours to get here?
Yeah, it's about 7.5 hours for the main Atlantic crossing. Mm-hmm. But British Airways, and I am not getting credit for this, but British Airways are opening up a direct flight to London again from Pittsburgh, which I am very excited about. So that starts in April. So that will cut out probably about 3 to 4 hours of my travel.
Oh, yes, and a lot of headache time, too.
Yeah, I mean, the change over time is dull mm-hmm. when you've just taken a long flight.
If you have to land at one of the, you know, Boston or New York or somewhere like that and then hang around and make connections for another flight.
Yeah, I mean, I like Charlotte. I think Charlotte is a really darling airport. I really enjoy their rocking chairs.
So that's where you flew to this time?
This time I flew through Philly, but I suppose if I have to pick, I usually fly through JFK or Charlotte.
Well, we'll talk about some of your work at the Science Museum, and we have a nice opportunity to sit down and chat here today. But, gosh, I want to talk about some of your world travels. First of all, during the past year, you were in Brazil, right?
That's right. Yes, that's the most exotic of my trips.
So what were you doing there?
So it's interesting. So at the Science Museum, a big part of what we try to do is establish working relationships with museums and who we would be considering colleagues around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And sharing stories, sharing expertise is something that's really important to us. And we had gotten a grant through the British Council to work with the Museum of Tomorrow in Rio de Janeiro. And part of that exchange was that the Museum of Tomorrow, which is a brand new museum, it's a fascinating museum. You should look it up. It's an amazing building. They wanted to start developing exhibitions that would tour, that they could tour around South America. And that's quite a specialized thing to do, and you have to think differently about how you construct pieces so that they can be taken apart and put back together.
Mm-hmm.
So I had gone over there along with three other colleagues in order to work with their exhibitions team, talk to them about the ideas, talk to them about how you set up that kind of thing as a business. And from a design point of view, what do you need to talk about with your designers? How do you need to think differently about what you're designing and the flexibility that it needs in order to fit into different spaces? And that's fine. I mean, that's my job. That's the things that I really like to do. It just really made it all the better because I got to talk about it with the setting of Copacabana or Ipanema Beach behind me and this incredibly lush landscape and really vibrant street art. And It felt really different. I felt like I was in such a different place. That was very exciting.
Had you traveled anywhere to South America previously?
I haven't, no. It's on my list of places to go, but somehow I feel like I need to learn some Spanish or Portuguese. It bothers me now. Having traveled quite a bit, it bothers me when I feel like I don't know any of the language. Yeah. I feel like you always have to try and make an effort when you're in new places, and it's really well accepted. So, but it's been a good taster, and I would absolutely go back, especially because I got the food wrong every time. Every time.
I forgot. That's right. In Brazil, in Rio, they speak Portuguese, not Spanish.
They do, yeah. Yes. And it's not a language that I feel like I hear very much, so it felt very contributed, I think, to the fact that the place and the language just felt very different.
What time of the year were you there?
I was there in end of January, actually, so it was perfect because I went from Pittsburgh being so cold and blizzardy last year down to very sunny, hot Rio.
You know, I was just going to ask you if they're, because, you know, everybody knows that Australia and New Zealand and South Africa, their seasons are just the opposite from ours. They're in midsummer right now. I don't know about Rio. I know that's toward the southern part of Brazil. Is it the fact that it's close enough to the equator that it's just kind of tropical or semi-tropical year-round?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The country is really big, so you might find that there are differences through the country, but I don't know that much about it. But Rio is right on the coast. It was interesting, too, because it was a very long flight, because it's far. It's really far. Yeah. But time zone-wise, I think it was only 2 hours difference from Pittsburgh.
Huh.
And that kind of messed with my head a little bit, because I was just expecting for it to, you know, sort of be on the other side of the world.
You know, I read about that somewhere in the past couple of years, and I can't remember, or maybe I saw it on Jeopardy or something, I don't know. But if you're flying from New York or Pittsburgh to Rio de Janeiro, you fly almost due south. In fact, it's a little bit east of us.
Yeah, it is. You know? Yeah, because it's sitting east into the ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I definitely had to consult the map because my high school geography did not stick with me enough to know exactly where I was flying to.
How long were you down there? Did you have any free time that you could, you know, scope out the place, like go to Ipanema?
Yeah. We had a week down there, and it was quite intensive work-wise, but we did do things every day. And they've got a good metro system, so that made transportation fairly easy. And we did, yes, I went to Copacabana Beach. It is, in fact, just, it's a very large beach. It was very, very crowded.
You know, the man who wrote that song just died here a few weeks ago.
Really?
I saw his obituary in the paper, and I can't remember his name, I got to be honest with you.
I don't know, but
it's the guy, you know, it's the guy that's not Astro Gilberto. It's the guy that actually wrote the song.
Yeah. Oh, but it is a good song.
Oh, it's a good song.
I mean, I have to say, one of the things I should have done while I was down there is listen to Stan Getz. I feel like I really missed out on a layer to my experience by not having that playing in my ears.
Every time you hear
ears.
Stan Getz for the rest of your life, you'll think,
I
was there.
I do, and it does make me very excited. And also because we were there the week before Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the week before Carnival looks just like Carnival without the big parade.
That's right. We tend to think of New Orleans as the big place for Mardi Gras here, and it is here in the U.S., but in many Latin countries, it's a big deal, and Rio is super big.
Yes, yes. Mm. I mean, I was wearing more clothes than anyone in the whole city, I think, the whole time. I just stood out the entire time because everyone was very much in carnival mood. And
now, did you have a chance to go to, I've never been there, what's the...
Christ the Redeemer.
Yeah, is it Sugarloaf Mountain?
And Sugarloaf Mountain,
okay,
yes.
Couldn't quite think of
the name. I did do both of those. We did Sugarloaf and Christ the Redeemer on the same day. That was our big tourist day.
Mm-hmm.
The Sugarloaf Mountain's really incredible because its shape, it just sticks out of the water like a shark fin. It's really, really steep, and you take a funicular up there.
Ah.
So then you get a great view. And of the coastline, and the bay where the water comes in, they call it the Guanabara Bay. Guanabara Bay. I really like the way that rolled off the tongue, although we had to practice it to say it correctly. But so you get these really great sweeping views, and from there you can see Christ the Redeemer, which is then on the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
And then to get there, everything is a little bit like a mini pilgrimage. It's a little bit of a trek to get to these places.
Christ the Redeemer, by the way, is a gigantic statue.
It's phenomenal.
Looks
it
over
really is.
Rio. Yeah.
And it's also really high up, so when you're up there, the clouds are sort of passing by. And,
really?
And,
wow.
And he'll be there, and then he's not there. And then the sun shines through, and he's there again. And but it's an absolutely stunning sculpture. When you see it up close, it's really, really beautiful. And it also has a really commanding position over the city. And from there, you get really good views of the favelas, which are the informal neighborhoods that they just march their way up these mountains, and it's where massive populations live in Brazil.
Do you have to take a funicular up there too, or
we did? It was
by the way,
I think
a funicular is like it's like the Mon incline, right, to the 10th power.
Yes.
Or a cog railway, something.
Yes, yes, that's what we took. It was like a single track rail line, I think, that we took up up to there. And I mean, that was really special. We finished that day on Ipanema Beach, which felt wonderful, and had a lovely dinner. That was actually the one meal that was nice, but I cheated because we had pizza. So, and that's not particularly Brazilian, although it was a good meal.
So, Rio in late January. And then I'm assuming you went back to London after that?
Yes, went back to London. And then, where did I go next? Then I did a bunch of little trips this year, which all ended up being really nice. When I left university, I had moved to Copenhagen for 2 years, and I had worked there. And I have maintained some really, really close friends, I mean, almost like family, who still live in Copenhagen. So I visit them regularly. And this year we had a sort of mini reunion with a couple of people who had also moved back to the States who were over for a visit.
I saw a survey last year that said, who are the happiest people in the world?
Oh, yeah.
And the answer was the people who live in Denmark.
They score very highly, yes. Yeah. I mean, it's a great quality of life.
It's a tiny country,
It's a very small country. It's got a pretty small population. The vast majority of the population does live in and around Copenhagen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got such great design history. The buildings, they've got gorgeous, very old buildings, but they were always built very well, so they're still in pretty good condition.
Now, you saw the gargantuan Christ the Redeemer statue in Rio. There's a very famous little statue in Copenhagen, right?
Yes, the Little Mermaid.
Yes.
And she's so tiny. I mean, you really expect, for the stories that go along with the Little Mermaid, you expect her to sort of have a presence, but honestly, you could be walking along the water and miss her. But she sits sort of just, there's a sort of rock outcropping, and she sits sort of at the end of that, outside of the city.
Have any language problems when you're in Denmark?
Denmark is all right, because when I was living there, I took Danish. So, I mean, I can order things in Danish. That goes all right. Mm. And I can understand a lot, not all of it anymore, because I don't use it. But
and you studied in Germany, so I'm sure you have a little bit of German anyway.
Yes, yeah. German is the one, I mean, that's the one language where I still feel now I'd really love to take a German class and just keep it, because I think the longer I'm away from Germany or, you know, don't particularly have German friends that I'm close with in London,
mm-hmm.
the need to use it and to practice is it means that I start off really slowly every time I'm back in Germany, but it's a language that I really love. So, yeah, I think spending time there and probably trying to find a class would be something good to do.
Now, you also spent some time in Glasgow, which is, for you and your travels last year, that would be like going from here to Shikora, you know. not much of a trip up to Scotland.
Oh, I've got some friends in Glasgow listening today, Dave. I think they'd beg to differ. Glasgow's an amazing city. It's got this great industrial history. It's got really beautiful architecture.
I wasn't comparing Glasgow to Shikora. I'm comparing the distance, you know, from London to Glasgow. I've actually been to Glasgow. It's a very friendly city.
Yeah, but I take the train when I go to Glasgow, so it's like 5 hours, I think. It's about what my drive was out to Cincinnati when I was studying. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's great. We went on a canal boat ride. So there's this amazing canal system all across the UK that was really a part of the infrastructure during the Industrial Revolution. And between Glasgow and Edinburgh, there's a canal that has an aqueduct. And so I got to take one of these long, skinny canal boats, and we went across the aqueduct and back. That was actually very exciting.
Hmm.
It moves quite slowly, but there's something very peaceful about the experience, and it's great countryside that you get to see.
Glasgow's on the west coast of Scotland. Edinburgh's on the east. But Scotland's pretty skinny
there. It is, so, yes. Yeah, because even with the canal boat, which moves, I mean, you can sort of walk alongside it kind of speed. I think that probably took us an hour, and then with the train, it's less than that. But
now, were you on a project in Glasgow, or was that just an opportunity to visit with friends?
I was visiting friends. Yeah, I had one of the times that I was talking to you, I was telling you about an exhibition that we did about the cosmonauts program, the mm-hmm. Russian space program,
mm-hmm.
and so one of my good friends who had been working on delivering that project with me, she's moved up there, so we like to try and keep in touch, and she'd moved up there to work at another museum, so of course we had to go look at her new museum and compare mm-hmm. notes. So,
well, when you're in a new city, I'm sure that's one of the things you like to do, visit museums,
I do go to a lot of museums, yes.
We need to take a quick break here. We're talking with Kristen Hibbs. She is a Butler native, a graduate of Butler High School, and went on to study architecture and now lives and works in London, England. She is the head of design for the Science Museum in London, which is pretty big, by the way, right?
It's a big museum, yeah. It's a big national museum.
Mm-hmm. And located in what part of London?
So we're in South Kensington, which is historically referred to as Albertopolis, which so Queen Victoria and Prince Albert created or wanted to create this cultural center for London.
Is Royal Albert Hall there?
It is, yes. Mm-hmm. Royal Albert Hall is, I guess that's on the north end of historically what was considered Albertopolis.
And that's a big performance hall.
It is. It's a gorgeous, beautiful building. Very grand inside, and it's round in its in its shape, which is kind of an unusual shape.
A lot of big concerts there.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Kind of like Carnegie Hall, New York. That would be that.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
I think that would be a good comparison. Yeah, and then so we've got the Victoria and Albert Museum, which is an art and design museum, natural history museum, which is where Pittsburgh's Dippy dinosaur clone was living for a very long time in the Natural History Museum in London. They've actually just, they've taken Dippy on tour, so he's doing like a road show across the UK, and they've redesigned their entrance hall, and they've got this gorgeous blue, I think it's a blue whale skeleton hanging in their entrance hall, and it's pretty amazing. It's enormous.
Now, what about Kensington Palace? Is that also in that area, or is that just another name of Kensington?
It is, yes. Kensington Palace is to the north. So right across the street from the Royal Albert Hall is Hyde Park. Hyde Park Hyde Park and Green Park. And Kensington Palace is then a little bit west. But you could walk there from the Science Museum.
Who lives there?
Who does live there? There's a lot of royals that live there. But Kate and William live there with their kids.
That's where, when Diana was alive, that's where
that is
Charles
where she had
Diana
an apartment.
Lived.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And I think until very recently, Harry and Meghan were living there.
It's not nearly as big as Buckingham Palace, is it?
It's not, but they're very different buildings. Like Kensington Palace is red brick, so it has a sort of softer. Somehow it has a softer feel to it, and Buckingham Palace is white stone.
Mm-hmm.
It feels more...
Ask an architect, folks, if you want to know different stones.
Yes.
Buckingham Palace looks kind of formidable.
It does.
It almost looks like a military.
It's very formal, and Kensington Palace feels like it's a domestic building, obviously at a scale that's out of this world, but...
A little bit bigger than a bedsit, that's
yes.
for sure.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk more with Kristen. It's delightful to have her here with us today. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be back right after these words.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
A special message at Christmas and holiday time from the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. They would not only like to wish you and yours a very, very merry and holy Christmas and a happy new year, but also to say thanks. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all of those who have supported them in their efforts during the past year. Thanks to those of you who donated to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store, to those of you who patronized the thrift store. All the proceeds there go to help fund the food cupboard and the client aid program. And thanks to those of you who donated provisions to the food cupboard throughout the year. And thanks to those of you, too, who donated extra produce from your garden during the harvest season to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul food cupboard. Thank you so much. and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all of you and yours from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Butler. And a special Merry Christmas, too, to our friends of the Orthodox tradition who just celebrated Christmas a couple of days ago. Merry Christmas to you folks as well. We're chatting with Kristen Hibbs today. Kristen is a Butler native who now lives and works in England. She is the head of design for the Science Museum in London and has been there for several years now.
Yeah, six and a half years now.
Mm-hmm. You worked at other museums before you were there?
I did, yes. I worked for an architecture office that specialized in cultural sector projects, so museums and exhibitions and heritage sites. And that afforded me the opportunity to really travel quite a lot because I worked as a consultant with lots of institutions around the world as they were trying to create strategic plans for how they wanted to use their building, how they wanted to develop their sites, what stories they wanted to tell.
I want to talk about some more of your world travels because, believe me, I got an email from Kristen a few weeks ago, and she started listing the places where she'd been in the last year. I said, wow. But I want to talk a little bit about, because you just got home, so that meant that you were still in England for Christmas, right?
That's right, yeah.
A lot of our traditions here in the United States with regard to Christmas have English antecedents. So do they celebrate Christmas any differently these days in England than we do here in the U.S.?
Well, I would say in London it goes really quiet ahead of Christmas because a lot of people who live in London end up going out of the city to visit family or whatever. So it's a really nice time to be in the city. We do a lot of Christmas decorating. There's a lot of light, Christmas light displays on the streets, which is very pretty to walk around and see. So Christmas Eve and Christmas Day is like the whole city shuts down. There's no trains, there's no buses. It's just like forced relaxation.
Do you ever get snow?
Rarely. I mean, sometimes we'll get flurries, but it just never sticks, which it upsets me a little because I just feel like Christmas and snow have to go together, although I realize that it hasn't necessarily been that way for a long time here either. So
no, it hasn't for a long time. Well, yeah. We had a white Christmas a couple of years ago, but it's been pretty rare in recent decades. Now, the day after Christmas is a big holiday in England, not here. In fact, most folks here wouldn't know what we're talking about if we said Boxing Day.
Boxing Day, yeah.
It's not Muhammad Ali and George Foreman. It's not that kind of boxing.
No, it's not. I mean, actually, I don't really know the history of it, but it's Boxing Day and Christmas Day are our two public holidays.
Yeah, everything's shut down on Boxing
Day. Yeah, I mean, this year I decided to celebrate Christmas Eve with a friend, and then of course because I couldn't get home, I ended up packing for 3 days of a visit just so that I could.
That's right. No trains on Boxing Day either.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Although they do see that as a big shopping day. So there's a lot of people who go out, but then it's very difficult to get anywhere. You almost have to have a car or be able to walk to where you're going to.
Mm-hmm. Are there opportunities to shop? I can't say downtown London. London is a gargantuan, sprawling place. But are there, department stores, shopping centers? Harrods is the big one. Is that still open?
Harrods is, yes, definitely. It is.
But that's pretty expensive, isn't it? I mean, that's in the upper class.
Yeah, I don't. What would I compare it to here? Like, does Neiman Marcus still exist? I don't know. Yeah, it is expensive. I mean, it's a worthwhile visit because they have some really bizarre departments. They have an entire pet department where I am sure these things are not allowed anymore, but they sold incredibly exotic animals.
Wow.
I know that friends of mine in London have memories as children of being taken there. They've got an amazing food hall, which is just really lovely to walk around.
Not necessarily the place you'd want to go to buy gym socks, though, I guess. Huh?
I mean, some people would, but no, I certainly wouldn't. And also, what I think is really funny is that the Harrods Food Hall was the first place where Krispy Kreme donuts arrived in London.
Wow.
And they were so expensive.
Mark this down.
I just find that really funny.
Well, back to your world travels. And folks, believe me, I've only scratched the surface here. You went, for us at least, halfway around the world to Australia. I guess it's not quite halfway around the world from London, but still a heck of a long flight,
really
right?
It's really far, yes.
Can you do the whole thing in one fell swoop, or do you have to stop in Dubai or somewhere?
I stopped over in Hong Kong.
Okay.
But yeah, that is a really long flight. And even from Hong Kong down to Brisbane, which is where I was in Queensland, was still another 8 hours.
Mm.
By the time you get to Australia, you just feel like you're so far away from everything. But yeah, that was wonderful because I had gone to Brisbane for the first time last year. And the Science Museum was working with the Queensland Museum, which is very similar to us.
Mm-hmm.
They have a science collection, an engineering, and natural history collection.
Well, you were working on a specific gallery down there.
That's right.
Like a Sparky or something like that?
Spark Lab.
Spark Lab. Okay,
yes.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Yes. Yes, so they wanted to create an interactive gallery for under 15-year-olds. And we had just developed what we call the Wonder Lab at the Science Museum in London, which is an interactive gallery which looks at science and mathematics, engineering, basically STEM area subjects,
mm-hmm.
And tries to break them down and reveal scientific phenomena in a way that people can engage with it and see it and experience it.
Trying to do more of that at Carnegie Science Center in Pittsburgh.
I'm sure
they are.
They just
built a new wing down there.
Yes.
That they're doing a lot
of. It's been a long time since I've been to the Carnegie, so I really do need to go see what they've done. But anyways, we were working with the Queensland Museum to redevelop theirs, and because we had existing relationships with different exhibit suppliers, we were able to help them, and they developed the project really quickly. We delivered the project in a year, and that's an incredibly short amount of time, so they worked really hard on it. But I got to go for the opening party, which was fabulous.
Now, where's Brisbane? I know that it's on like the, let's see, that would be the eastern or southeastern coast of Australia. That's about all I know.
Yes, so east coast, it's in Queensland, which is, I think it's not north-north, but it's sort of northeast-ish.
Mm-hmm. Well, most of the big cities like Sydney and Brisbane, they're on that eastern
they're
coast.
They're on the east coast.
Perth would be the lone exception, which is on the other side of Australia.
Right, yeah. From sort of north to south, there's, I don't know how to say it correctly, Cairns, which is in Queensland, and that's sort of the city that you would start at if you were going to go visit the Great Barrier Reef.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I didn't make it that far, but I could see it on the map. It was close. And then you've got Brisbane, which apparently they call Brisvegas.
Oh, really?
Yes. There's a lot of casinos it's very glitzy. But I think it's a great city. It's got a river that cuts in through it. It reminded me a lot of London, actually.
Well, Australia, I imagine, is still part of the British Commonwealth. Didn't it start out as a penal colony that England would send prisoners there? You know, lifers or something like that?
Yes, that's right. I mean, I think, yes. My experiences of working with my colleagues in Queensland have really opened my eyes to some of the really, it's pretty unsettling history, I think, of that. And the
back in that day, I mean, you think it takes a long time to get there by jet. Can you imagine going by ship back in the days when it was a penal colony? I mean, that would literally like being sentenced to go to the ends of the earth, you know?
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, that would just take a lifetime, I think. Mm-hmm. It would just feel like forever. But yes, so that was great. But because I thought I was going to do work with them, I mean, I thought they were going to have lots of work to do before they opened, but they were in a really good place. So I took myself to a koala sanctuary, which was amazing. And I saw kangaroos and wallabies and these, I was going to look up the name of this animal because I did want to tell you about it, and now I forget. But it was a combination of a fox and a bat in one animal. And it was enormous.
Mm.
It was enormous. It was the most amazing combination I've ever seen.
Kind of scary.
It was absolutely frightening. I can't imagine if that thing took flight. I mean, just frightening. But also, and obviously koalas. And the whole place smelled beautiful, like eucalyptus, because, you know, that's what the koalas live in.
Koalas are the cute little bears. Kangaroos are funny. Koala bears are cute.
Koala bears are very cute, but they've got frightening-looking claws. I did get to sort of mildly pet one koala's back as a handler was holding it, so I got my picture taken with it. The kangaroos were actually quite frightening to see up close. They're enormous.
I understand they're pretty violent animals, you know?
I could imagine that. I mean, there was one point where... So there was an area where you could walk into the field, and that's where there were a lot of wallabies and koalas. So kangaroos. So you were with them together in this sort of open area, and at some point they got startled, and just like 25 kangaroos just start hopping across the field. Mm. It was very exciting. I was in an area where they weren't hopping past me, so it wasn't scary. But
now, are koalas endangered? You say this was a koala sanctuary?
Yeah. So, I mean, I suppose it's like an animal reserve. So, I mean, it had quite a long history there. I think probably when they started to really develop the area, there was, as most stories start off, like quite a wealthy family who were really interested in trying to preserve nature and the animals that were prevalent to the area, and so they created this sanctuary, I mean, years and years ago. It feels different from a zoo, but I suppose there are some areas where, because of the nature of what the animal is, they're, you know, completely separated and not able to mix. But It was fantastic, and I took a boat to get there, and that was also really fun because I got to see a bit more of sort of, you know, what people's houses look like, which I'm always interested in.
I saw a video, it was last week actually, one of those video recaps of New Year's around the world, and Sydney Harbour, and they have the most fantastic fireworks display I've ever seen, including shooting them off over that, talking to an architect here, that iconic opera house in Sydney Harbour.
Yeah, I did. Last year when I was in Australia, I did go down to Sydney. I've got a good friend who lives down there, and I did go worship at the feet of Jorn Utzon at the Sydney Opera House. But I also climbed the Sydney Harbour Bridge, which was really fun. They take you on a tour up and around, and I mean, I don't remember now, but they were telling us, you know, statistics like how many rivets were used in the bridge and stuff like that. It's really fascinating to get into the middle of all of that structure and see just how big those parts are. And of course, it had a fabulous view, and it was incredibly windy, and we had to wear these really ridiculous, like, onesie outfits and latch ourselves onto a rail so that we were tied onto the bridge the whole time.
Does it move in a strong wind?
There is movement, yeah.
I only ask because I've seen video of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, which they designed to move
there has
in case
to be
of
movement.
Earthquakes.
Yeah, exactly. There is movement. I mean, I couldn't perceive it, but I'm sure if you measure it, it's built for that.
We're talking to Kristen Hibbs. We need to take a break. She, believe it or not, visited other places over the past year. Your frequent flyer mileage must be going up there like crazy.
I have to say, I'm doing really good this year.
We'll talk about some of our other trips when we come back on It's Your Turn here on WISR in just a moment. Be right back. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Did you buy a car, truck, or SUV last year thinking you were going to get 0% or some other low-rate finance offer and then drove off the lot with a much higher rate? Don't worry. Armco Credit Union has the solution. Refinance with us and get a 60-month loan on a 2016 or newer vehicle for just 2.24% APR. We've got low rates on older models, too. It's never been easier to join, so call any of our four branch locations today or visit us at armcocu.com for membership and rate information. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federal. Insured by NCUA.
Welcome back, friends. We're having a conversation with Kristen Hibbs on the It's Your Turn program today. Kristen is a Butler native who now lives and works in England, in London. She's the head of design at the Science Museum there. She's home for a visit with family for a couple of weeks. And in fact, she just got home a day or so ago, so we appreciate her stopping in, perhaps still a little groggy from jet lag. Well, maybe not, though. The traveling that you did last year, for goodness sakes, we've talked about several places that you've been, and there's still a couple of more we want to mention. Dubai, in the Middle East.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of that. That's one of the richest cities in the world. It's all oil money, of course.
Yes.
Isn't that the place where they have the indoor ski slope? And I'm not talking about, 20 feet down a sliding board. They actually have a mountain with snow inside this building in the middle of the desert.
Yes, that's in the Dubai Mall.
Really?
It's...
That sure beats the skating rink at Monroeville Mall, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah, it's pretty impressive. And... So I didn't go to that mall, but I'd gone to a different mall this time, because that's kind of what you do when you're looking for something to do after a while. It's very hot there. Mm-hmm. And they had this absolutely enormous skating rink in the mall that I went to, and also an enormous aquarium. It was sort of three stories high aquarium that you could visit.
And yeah. There's that... I think it's the tallest building in the world.
The Burj Khalifa, yes.
What's the name of it again?
The Burj Khalifa.
I
don't know if I'm saying that right, but...
Well, it's okay by me. I never knew the name of it. I've seen pictures of it, and it's obviously
gargantuan.
It's
such a gorgeous building. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as skyscrapers go, it was designed by SOM, which is an American, a very historic American architecture practice. And I just think it's so classy. I don't think there are a lot of buildings in Dubai that are built that are classy, but I think that tower is just gorgeous.
Is it open to the public, or is it just people that work there that can go up to the top?
They have a rooftop restaurant and bar, and then they also have a 360 viewing platform that you could go up to.
Probably,
I didn't.
Probably
but
costs a fortune.
It's very expensive.
Like going up to the top of... the new World Trade Center. Somebody told me they were in New York and were going to go up there. When they heard how much it cost, they said, "We'll just look at it from the ground."
Yes,
you know.
Yeah, it's it is expensive. I mean, you're really high up there, but
now the rest of the city, lots of other new construction and so on due to all the oil money.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of always a city in being transformed. I was there to give a paper at a conference, which was something I'd never done before, so
pretty
I was quite
prestigious.
Excited.
Yeah, if you're asked
to
give
a little nervous
paper
as well, but yeah, that went really well. I met some nice people.
What was your paper on?
I was talking about our Wonder Lab, actually. The conference was about cultural tourism in the Middle East. And it's quite a tricky one for them because there's a lot of – they've got leisure activities. They've got lots of outdoor sport kind of activities. They've got beaches. They've got shopping. But the cultural sector, museums and galleries, it's not something that feels that common, I suppose, in the same way that we see museums and galleries having a role in the States or even in Europe. And so they don't really have that history. But it is a part of what people are looking for in the mix of what they want when they're traveling around. And so obviously they've been investing quite a lot in their cultural infrastructure. And in particular, one of the museums that I went to see, the Louvre, Abu Dhabi, is just this exquisite building that it's an extension of the Paris Louvre, so mm-hmm. it's their collection mm-hmm. that's on display there. And I guess similar to the sort of origins of my museum, where they created out of nowhere a cultural district. That's really the kinds of things that Dubai and Abu Dhabi are trying to do. And so I was talking about the importance of thinking about who your audience is, and the fact that this is a real opportunity to bring school children into the museum, which opens up something new for them. And if the children have a good time on their visit, then they might bring their families back. And that could be a way of growing a local community that would be using the museum, and not just expats or tourists, which they need. But there's also a lot of Emiratis who are living there, and you also want the local community to be a part of it.
Now, this was an international conference where you gave this talk, so I'm assuming that English was okay. There were a lot of people that understood English.
Yes. The conference was either in Arabic or in English, and so if it was in Arabic, it was subtitled. But then actually, if it was in English, that was fine, or I guess somewhat expected, I suppose, because they had... I mean, it was really interesting for me because they had speakers from Oman and from Qatar and some of the different emirates, like states in the Arab Emirates, and all of them talking about their strategy. And Dubai, I hadn't really thought about this, but Dubai's airport happens to be one of the busiest exchange airports in that region.
What do you mean by an exchange?
Lots of
airport?
People will connect flights there.
Oh, okay.
On the way to somewhere else. But they have a real struggle getting people to leave the airport and actually visit Dubai.
Uh-huh.
And so they were talking about, you know, well, these are the challenges that we know we have. These are the kinds of, offers that we have. How do we develop this into a business? And one of the things that I was thinking about and also reflecting about Rio was how difficult it is to get from one destination to the next. So I do research before I travel. I pick out the buildings or the museums or the, interesting places that I want to be, that I want to see. And then I figure out how am I going to get there. And ideally, I don't like to take taxis. I'd rather take public transportation if it's available. But you really have to work quite hard in these places. And I think as a way of making it easier for tourists, I mean, I feel like they should just have a shuttle, and you just buy a ticket and the shuttle drops you wherever you go. I mean, that's how it works in a lot of, I guess, in European cities and over here, I'm sure as well, where you've got like the bus tour kind of thing.
Yeah. I have never visited Middle Eastern Arab country, so it just seems to me it would be very hard to, kind of fit in, not just from a language standpoint, but from dress. I mean, Europeans and Americans tend to dress quite a bit differently than I would expect that most people in Dubai do anyway.
Yeah, Dubai... I would say Dubai is probably an exception in the region because it is very international because of all of the business. So you get a real mix of people from all over the world who have found themselves there. Whereas if you were in a smaller place, yes, your dress would definitely be something that indicates that you're not from the area.
So you didn't feel that out of place there then?
Not really. I've worked in the air before, and I had worked in Egypt for a while. So I think I have an idea about how I want to dress for myself to feel comfortable in those places. And because I'm always there in some way doing business, I take that very seriously, and I really try to be respectful of the culture. But it's really hot. It's really hot there. So you have to pick your clothing materials well, and it has to be cotton, really uncomfortable.
They wear white for a reason, huh?
Yes, there's a lot of white. Yes, yeah.
You also, believe it or not, had another major world city that you visited last year, and that was Venice.
Yes.
Was that for business or pleasure?
Venice was, I'm so lucky. Venice was also for work this year. Venice was amazing. I've never been there before. Obviously, studying architecture, it's a place that's sort of been on my you-must-go list. But I've not traveled very much in Italy at all. And my boss had decided that we should go to what's called the Venice Biennale. So every 2 years.
This is an exhibit or a conference or something?
Yes, it's like an expo.
Okay.
And they invite architects from around the world. I went to the architecture one. There's also an art one. But they invite architects from around the world to design installations or architectural follies and talk about their work. There's always a theme, so they're supposed to respond to that theme. Mm-hmm. But really what it is just, it's just this incredible wealth of inspiration and ideas, because everything is built so beautifully. And for me, I felt like I came away with all kinds of new ideas about how we could use materials differently. There seemed to be a big theme with mirrors. Lots of installations were using mirrors in a way that would change your perception of the space that you were in, mm-hmm. which I found really exciting. Not to mention the sort of Instagrammable quality of the mirror selfie, which, you know, I saw a lot of people doing while they were there. and because it's representing all of the countries around the world, it's just, again, it feels very, you're always seeing influences from different places, and how they interpret a theme is always very different. But then Venice as a city, so the expo happens in these, it happens in what's called the Arsenale, which is a harbor area. Actually, it's an incredible building where they used to make ropes. Hmm. So it's like over a kilometer long. It's so, so long and skinny. It's absolutely incredible. And it's that perfect combination of crumbly building. So you have beautiful brick and this sort of rusty metal of all of the original fixings.
I have been in Venice. I wasn't there very long, 3 days, I think. You have to take the causeway out into the sea to get to Venice. It's not like, you know, okay, just drive up and there you are. You have to take this causeway.
That's right.
Which is a little bit different.
It's really exciting,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, and then I went on a train. I don't know whether you're allowed to take cars out there or not, but and then you take water taxis, you know,
right.
to wherever you're going on the canals.
Yes, so we took a motorboat from the airport into the city, which was very exciting. I was also surprised. In my mind, I suppose, I just assumed that its connection to land, that it was more like a peninsula that stuck out.
Yeah,
but
it's really more of an island.
Yeah. I mean, it's very incredible. And
very close together. That's one thing that I didn't realize. It is just so jam-packed.
It is so dense.
Yeah.
And it's not just the canals, which I expected, but was equally very delighted by the fact that you could just... It's almost like you're always walking up over a little bridge, because you have to go up over the canal in order to allow the boats to go under. But then there were all these alleyways as well, and I think that's what surprised me, was that although you also had, you had water everywhere, and then you had to try and squeeze buildings in, but then in between the canals you also had alleyways, and then it's like, well, where was there room to make a building in between all of this?
Did you get to the Piazza San Marco?
I did.
The Cathedral of San Marco?
I did, absolutely. I mean, it's just so remarkable.
A lot of architecture there for an architect to ponder.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, that's one of those places where I will inevitably fall over because I'm walking, looking up, and not paying attention to what's going on underneath my feet. But... Yes, it was just amazing. It's the kind of place that says, if you can manage to figure me out and not use a map, then you've really made it. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just remarkable.
And good luck on that, too, by the way. We'll take a final break here, and then we'll be back to wrap up our conversation with Kristen Hibbs here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. Hey, folks, have you heard about Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center? Yeah, they're located just off Newcastle Road, Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande. Going Postal Butler. They package your items for shipping. And that takes care of a situation that sometimes can be a real bother. You know, you got to get the wrapping paper, the string, the tape, whatever you need. They'll do it for you. And you can ship any way you want to, FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service. They will package your items for shipping at Gowan Postal Butler. Other services they offer, copying, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals, custom boxes. They have an official notary, also greeting cards, even a lottery agent. Gowan Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane. That's just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's in the Shockey mini storage area. For more information, give them a call, 724-841-0044. Gowan Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Butler Transit now provides weekday transportation to and from Pittsburgh for just $5 one way. No worrying about traffic or expensive parking fees. Free Wi-Fi is also available. Park at a convenient park and ride or hop on the bus at the downtown bus terminal. Senior 65 and up, ride free with a senior pass. For more information, visit butlertransit.com.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us. The bus. We're going your way.
Wrapping up our conversation with Kristen Hibbs here today. Boy, time has flown by here.
Yeah.
You're finishing a project at your museum too, right?
Yes, I've got a couple of projects on the go, but the one I've really been focusing on for the last year, almost 2 years now, is a new patron center. So as a part of the way that the museum funds itself, we've got some funding from our government, but that reduces over time, depending on what the sort of the budget setting is within Parliament. Mm-hmm. And but then we also really rely on sponsorship, so funders and donors. That could be corporate companies or it could be individuals. And we happen to have sold one of our buildings to our neighbor, who's Imperial College London, so it's a big university. And when we did that, we lost some of the spaces that we'd used for some of this fundraising activity. So I was given this wonderful project to transform an Edwardian Royal Mail sorting office, this beautiful space with glazed brick tiles and a parquet floor, into a new suite of rooms where we could do entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been such a wonderful, taking me more back to my roots, you know, architecture project.
Yeah.
Making new connections into the building and doing some refurbishment of these historic spaces. And hopefully creating a space that is going to be, you know, beneficial to the museum and help us continue to deliver our very ambitious program of activities and exhibitions and projects. And yes, we're on site and nearing completion, and we should be open on the 7th of March. So it's coming to a close quickly, and that always feels, those last stages of construction always feel quite nerve-wracking, but things come together really quickly in the end, and so it's looking really great.
Any of the royals dropped by during the past year? I know Prince Charles has visited you on occasion.
Yeah, that's right. He stopped by again this year. We had hosted a season where we were celebrating science and technology in India, and it was a part of a bigger cultural celebration across London. And yes, so we had hosted Prince Charles and some, I think it was actually the Prime Minister of India, and some other delegates who were visiting from India at the museum, because we had put two exhibitions on. So they had come to see the show, and it's exciting, you know, when we get the royals into the museum. And I think it does a lot for the museum, but it also does a lot for the exhibitions or the stories that we're trying to tell. And I think the role that museums can play in a sort of soft power kind of setting with creating and maintaining relationships with other countries.
It's nice to talk to you again.
Thank you. It's been lovely to be here, Dave.
I appreciate your stopping by. Obviously, when you're back in your hometown for a very limited time, you want to visit family, you want to visit friends, and We appreciate you stopping by and chatting with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, good to see you. Coming up on tomorrow's program, among other things, we're going to be talking about medical myths and old bromides. So I hope you can be with us. I think we have some open talk time tomorrow as well. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll see you tomorrow, hopefully at 12:30 on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Meet mine. And lately, when I love you, I know you're not satisfied. Woman, oh, woman, have you got cheating on your seen the way men look at you when they think I don't see, and it hurts to have them think that you're that kind. But it's knowing that you're looking back that's really killing.